Hello and welcome to Brain Drops, a new podcast with your two hosts, Dominic and Leonard. Dominic is a strength and conditioning coach or performance coach at the professional basketball club BG Göttingen, and myself, I am a half professional athlete playing basketball for Würzburg and other half working for a psychological consulting company. And we're both very excited to do our very first episode in English since we started in German, because today we have our very first guest on this show, Adam Waliszkowski, who came through and took some time for us to talk about his 15-year career overseas playing basketball in numerous countries. And we tried to squeeze some brain drops out of him for you guys, so you guys have some new ideas planted in your head, or some new thoughts you never had before, or some new perspective on themes that you never had before like this. And this is the main theme of our podcast. We're trying to plant new ideas in everybody's heads, including ourselves. And we're hoping you will be tuning in also in the future. We have more guests coming also from basketball and other, maybe some coaches, maybe some trainers or whatever. We have them coming. We hope it's interesting for you. Stay tuned. See you soon. Welcome back, Brain Drops, episode 4. Today, first one in English, with your usual hosts, Dom. Hey, Dom.
Hey, Leonard, good to hear your voice. Yes. How are you doing? Good?
I'm great. And yes, also with me again. And today we have our first guest on the show. Please welcome with me, Adam. Adam Waliszkowski. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Leonard. How you doing, man?
Great to have you on the show. Thanks for
having me on. Yeah, it's great to be a guest. Your first guest.
Actually, yeah, the first guest.
Special.
Yeah. Special.
So, you know, I'm just trying to get us started here, I think.
Yeah.
So, and in regards to Adam, you know, Adam, one thing I have to ask you before, I would like you to introduce yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked you the first time if you want to join our podcast, there was this joy, this big joy in your eyes.
Yeah.
And you were like, right away, of course, that's exactly what I want. I'll be there with you guys. Why? Where does it come from?
Yeah, I don't know. I have this, I really enjoy being in a social conversation. And, you know, I've gotten to the point now where sometimes I'll just turn on my phone and record conversations because I love it so much. And I'm such a big podcast guy, too. You know, I listen to a bunch of different podcasts on Apple and all the different places. And I don't know, it's just a great idea to me, and I haven't been on one, so I was really like, it was kind of like a child's excitement to try it out for the first time with you guys.
I mean, that's the perfect foundation for our first guest, I suppose. So, give the listeners, just introduce yourself. You know, I mean, you have been a professional basketball player, several teams.
Yeah.
Just go ahead.
Yeah, obviously, Adam Waliszkowski. This is my 15th season playing basketball over here in Europe. Before that, I went to Florida State University from 2001 to 2005. You know, I grew up in Midwest in Ohio. And when I go back, you know, my parents live in Michigan now. So when I go back to Ohio, I visit Michigan a lot. But yeah, I've been playing over here for 15 years, I said, and in multiple different European competitions. But also, I played in the countries of Germany, France, Cyprus, Czech Republic and Slovakia, and Kosovo throughout my 15-year career. So
it's a long time, a lot of teams you played for, and now you play for BG Göttingen,
my
third round here.
Third round, exactly.
Third round, I thought second.
Yeah, no, I played here also before, back in 2010, when, I think it was 2009, 2010, when John Patrick from Ludwigsburg was the coach here in Göttingen. I played for him the first time here.
So you played with Dwayne Anderson, right?
Yeah, Dwayne Anderson, Jason Boone was on that team, John Little. Who else was on that team?
Ben Jacobson, right?
He was actually on the year before, team the year before, and then he had left that year. But I actually played with Ben when I was in France. In Brest, France, he came and played for the playoffs with the team that I was on. So I have a kind of different relationship with Ben as well, or I know him more on a personal basis than just through basketball, like a lot of guys that I know in the league.
Yeah, a little side note here, you know, in our intro, Leonard actually said that Dwayne Anderson is probably also going to be a guest on our show. It's nice.
Yeah,
nice thing that you know him.
Yeah, that'll be a good dude. You know, I haven't talked to Dwayne in a while since since our time here in Göttingen, but you know, he seems to be doing really well at he's still at Penn State, right? And
he went to Villanova, actually.
Or Villanova, excuse me. I got that mixed up in my head. I was thinking the same.
But he was at Penn State.
He's gonna cuss at me if you heard that.
That's fine.
How dare you disrespect me? Oh, sorry, Dwayne. No disrespect mentioned at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, I think you've heard that we in this podcast we obviously deal with performance related topics, of course, because I've been here for 5 years as a physical performance coach, and obviously for me it's really interesting to hear it from you, basically, like, you know, 37 years old and you know, relatively injury free, no really big injuries. You said the ankle injury.
Yeah, I actually I think it was maybe 5 years back, I tore all the ligaments in my left ankle, but I mean, it was a serious injury, but I was only out for I think 4 or 5 weeks, and you know, it's nothing that required surgery, something where the tendons repaired themselves or the ligaments repaired themselves. So
okay. Yeah. So my question here is, you know, how do you take care of your body? You know, 37, still in the league playing. Is there like, do you have any like certain like special routines you do maybe before or after basketball practice? Just can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an ever changing battle as you get older in sports, you know, and I think one of the main things I try to do now at 37 is listen to what my body's telling me, especially when it comes to, you know, certain parts of my body or things that I've, you know, my ankles or my knees or something like that. If they're not ready to go or they, you know, just not wake for the day, you know, I have to listen to them and take that time off that I need. But, you know, on the other hand, I try to do, you know, talking about an weightlifting type of workouts and stuff. You've seen the stuff that you have me do is really well, works really well for me, but I also try not to do like so much heavy lifting anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't lift legs nearly as much as I did when I was younger and in college, just because it's a lot, you know, for my body to take with practice and, you know, all that, the stuff that we do on the court. So I really steer away from doing that. And I've really gotten into doing a lot of yoga and stretching. I mean, you've seen after practice, I'd need at least 20 to 30 minutes to stretch all the parts of my body that need it. You know, everything from the waist down for sure needs to get stretched. And then, you know, I've had other tightness and soreness issues with my shoulder. So I'll do, you know, upper body exercises too. But for sure, that's one thing that I've really, in my 30s and my late 30s now, is stretching is like the most important thing as a and most of the time for me it's stretching after exercise, you know, after we work out or after a bus trip or, you know, something to loosen me up before I get you know, start practice. Or you probably know more about it than I do, but I always heard that stretching prevents injuries and helps with, you know, regeneration of the muscles. So it's more important, or I heard that it's more important to do it after.
Yeah, this is actually a really controversial topic at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right now.
Well, for me, it's been the thing that's worked the best.
And that's the most important thing, and that's exactly what I always tell my guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always pretty individual. Yeah, what works for you does not necessarily have to work for a different guy.
Right.
So this is something I actually always try to bring across, that the guys need to find stuff that work for them.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, and if it's, I don't know, if it's, for example, if it's a trap bar deadlift for the one guy, it's maybe the single leg deadlift for the other guy, you know, that makes him feel good. Because in the first episode, we were also talking about that a little bit. Well, actually, I brought that up. And that's actually basically also my next question to you. What I've learned through my, you know, it's 5 years is not a lot, but that's what I can take away from
more than the 5 years that I know of strength and conditioning training.
Yeah, but that's what I can take away from it. I think that guys who have been injured before just at some point just develop a little better, let's say, a little better
habits.
Habits, yeah, exactly, for sure. And they start
They become more conscious about it.
Exactly. They become more conscious about what it means to be healthy.
Yeah, right. And they, you know, they've, after you have a serious injury, you know, the next step after the surgery obviously is the rehab. And so they know what it takes to get from the injured back to fully healthy, and that it actually takes some work rather than, you know, when you're young and you can take, you know,
do two minutes of stretching again.
And then go right out on the court and play for 2 hours. You know, you don't think about having to take care of your body as much as you do when you're older. But when you're older and you have those injuries and, you know, getting going to start practice takes a lot longer. And then, you know, cooling down after practice or being able to have that, let's say the energy or the, you know, your joints or whatever muscle, your injury, being able to take the duration of a long practice and the stamina and the intensity, you know, it wears down over time as you get older.
What was like a point that you had, or was it even a point, or was it just a slow progress where you started to actually listen to your body? Because, you know, like a lot of new kids come in now these days just thinking, oh, it's all working, I don't need to stretch, I don't need to do weights, I just go ball and just destroy. And since you said you never had that one big injury that kind of like opened up your mind or whatever.
I know what you mean. It's actually, I would say it started when I stopped drinking alcohol. That first month or so before or right after that, I needed something to fill the time and to kind of take my mind off the fact that I had stopped drinking. And I started doing the Insanity workout. Have you heard of that one?
I heard about that one, yeah.
And it's, I can't remember exactly what the website is, but, you know, the guy Sean T, it's more of a, let's say, in place type stuff. Where P90X is more lifting and strength training type stuff. This one's more of a, let's say, conditioning and getting in shape, doing body weight type exercises and those type of things. And that's where I really got into taking care of my body, putting the right things, eating dietary, you know, having the right nutritional habits and changing those habits that I had. And then also getting into like doing the stretching, getting into yoga. That's where I first got into, I had done some yoga before in my basketball career as let's say extra stuff to do with stretching and staying loose, but never really got into it. And after that, you know, they had one day that was recovery day that was yoga, and I was like, man, I really enjoy this and my body feels great after this. So that's kind of something I started veering towards. And, you know, now in the summer times, it's, yoga is probably 80% of the work that I do, just because you can vary the intensity of how much you want to do. And, you know, if you want to get a good workout and get some cardio and all that stuff, then you can do that. Or you can just stick to stretching and, you know, doing the slower stuff. So,
yeah, I think that's always pretty interesting. And I always come back to this. It's again, and I think every athlete has to find out what works best for him.
Yeah. And that's
for you, maybe that's yoga, you know, maybe that's something that worked for you. And for somebody else, it's maybe regular lifting. You know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I do at 37 and as a 2 meter, 308 kilo, you know, white guy can differ from somebody like Bennett, who is, say, however tall he is and however stocky he is. So,
by the way, just side note, Bennett, it's our German, one of our German playmakers, really young.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
So
yeah,
just that you
listen. Yeah. People don't understand. I forgot. But yeah, so I mean, everybody's the different positions and different. I think it needs to be tailored to what they need their strength and you know, functionality, strength and conditioning for. You know? I don't believe in the old school way of just, you know, lifting to lift to get bigger and get stronger, because that's going to make you a better player.
That was actually the type of lifting you did in your college, or
no. I mean, I don't want to say it was so much just like Olympic, like we were lifting to get big, because we did do more focused strength training. And, you know, Florida State, the strength coach there, Mike Bradley, did an amazing job. And I did some workouts there that were just, you know, I'd never done before in my life type stuff. And it was all, you know, great workouts. But I feel like when you're younger, obviously, as you're still developing, they're trying to build all that muscle and put all that muscle on you. And that's where the focus is. And, you know, at 37, I'm not trying to build muscle like that. I'm trying to maintain the muscle that I have and the strength that I have. So obviously it's going to be a different type.
And obviously your reasons behind it is probably because you want to stay on the court.
Yeah, of course. You know, things that what my body can do, instead of pushing myself to be exhausted and then I got it on the court and my body can't handle it. And that's when, I think that's when injuries start to happen. You know, I've seen a lot of guys that I've known in my career that are really workout oriented guys, and they do all kinds of stuff, and they battle with injuries, and they work so hard, and it's just one of those things that I think that has a correlation to it. I have, you know, this is just my opinion, but I think it has a pretty big correlation with injuries like that.
I think one big point there is also that listening, you said it earlier, listening to your body, but you got to be like, that's also experience. Like there's this type of pain, like especially with injuries, like this type of pain that you can maybe play through. And there's that other type of pain where, you know, okay, I got to stop now. And I right. see, like, especially now I played 2 years in Pro B now, and we have a lot of Americans coming over, like, at the start of their career. And I see them sometimes having pains maybe in their knee, and like they don't know if that's a pain that they should maybe take a day off or 2 weeks off, and then they just try to go by what the doctor right. is saying or what anybody else is saying, and then they never really listen to their body. And I think that's also something that's really important for players to learn throughout their career.
Yeah, that, you know, I did, I'm speaking from a 15-year veteran, but that's something I kind of forget as those younger guys, and especially coming out of college, or, you know, the younger mentality of if it's not broke, you know, play through it, or, yeah, you know, you're not bleeding, keep playing. So it's I've always had that mentality too, and that's kind of got me in trouble with a couple of my injuries, just because, you know, I've had plantar fasciitis a couple times, and it's one of those, well, I can just play through it, I can just play through it, but in the long run, it ended up prolonging how long it took me to get over the plantar fasciitis. So
yeah, it's always a tough balance, because you want to also want to show to like other people, I'm not a, you know,
yeah, it's a mentality, right?
Yeah exactly. You want to see that from young players.
Yeah, you want to push through when times are tougher, when things, you know, you're not 100%. I want to show that mentality that you're gonna go the extra, make that extra effort when they need it. So, you know, it's all part of the playing the sport. Yeah.
And then players just hate to sit out games when they see their brothers, yep. let's say, out there competing and trying to get that win. And you just, yeah, sit on the side.
Yeah, true. That's another thing, too, is especially if, say, it's in a college atmosphere, a younger atmosphere where you're fighting for playing time or fighting for a position, then you have an injury and, you know, you feel like you're, the other guy might be stepping up or doing more than you are. So you want to get out there and show that you can play through it. And you know, that sometimes you don't take into account the, you know, that it might be something more than just a sore muscle or a, you know, a tweak of something.
Yeah, yeah. So you said that the stuff Dom does really, really helps you a lot. What's like maybe something you picked up this season still from Dom that there was like, oh, this is maybe not mind blowing, but this is new, even though I've been in the game for 15 years already.
Well, Dom, this year I feel like his focus has been on hip mobility, and it's actually been great for me because, you know, early in the season when I was at Frankfurt, I was having trouble with my hip flexors and keeping them, you know, stretched, and I mean, of nobody's fault but my own, but it was just something that my body was going through because, you know, getting old, let's just say getting old, my back was moving, my hips were moving out of place and shifting everything, whatever. But so, you know, getting here and having Dom really focusing on hip mobility and working on those things, I found that I feel stronger in those areas and they feel more stable since we've been working on them so much. And I mean, that's one thing that I've really noticed this year. I think back has always been one of the things that he's focused on since you've had your back injury, right? So.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where it all started for Dom.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it got into it. So
exactly. Yeah, but interesting stuff. Good to hear that it, well, seems to complement. Oh, help you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been helping me get back to almost healthy. I'm fine. I'm fixing one problem, finding another one, but I guess that's part of being an athlete at 37. So,
but still running, huh?
Still going.
You get a lot of trash talk on the team if you're like, I'm imagining now you're probably one of the first guys in and one of the last ones out, always stretching, doing stuff. And I've always been that type of player too, even though I'm not, let's say, that old yet, but yeah. I've always got some trash talk for it.
Yeah, right. No, it's one of those things. I'm like one of the grandpas in the locker room because I'm always reminiscing about stuff. Kind of like today, we were out. We were doing the warm-up today with Dom, and I forget what song it was came on.
Oh, you played a great song.
It was Young MC, I think.
Young MC.
What was that song? Bust a Move came on. And as Dominic Lockhart, I was like, Dom, what year were you born? I think he said it was born in, what, 96, 95? I can't remember, one of those. But I'm pretty sure that song was older than him, so it was kind of funny. Like, you know, I'm playing music that's older than the guys that are out here working out on the court. And for sure it was older than Bennett, because he's only 18, so.
18, I don't know, is he 20 or 21? Sorry, yeah, Bennett.
But that's another thing, too. Bennett's half my age. I'm playing with a kid that's half my age, so yeah. It's crazy to think about.
Well, that was actually a good question from Leonard. I have to give you that, Leonard.
Oh, thanks.
Speaking of that, you know, I have another question, you know. It's, you know, usually people always say that it's good to have a veteran on the team.
Yeah.
But, you know, what does it mean to you? What does it mean on the court? What does it mean maybe in practice, in the locker room, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you kind of grow into. But as a veteran, you do have a lot of influence over what goes on or what's being said or what the talk of what's going on. So, you know, I try as a veteran to be when we're out on the basketball court, for sure to be as vocal as possible, to get mm-hmm. guys, you know, talking and communicating with each other. Because basketball, obviously, there's five guys on the court, and without communication, every coach knows, every player knows, without communication, nothing works. So being vocal and trying to use my experience, my knowledge of some of the stuff, really just those type of things, for sure. You know, in the locker room, I try and be serious as much as possible when times need to be serious and be focused on that stuff. But also, you know, being in a professional sport where things are geared on winning and losing and performance, sometimes you just need to goof around and have a little bit of fun.
Exactly.
And, you know,
yeah,
I think as a veteran player, you've been through all kinds of stuff over here. I mean, obviously, things like this, especially like the coronavirus going around right now, like this is one of those things you take away as an experience of playing over European basketball. But, you know, try and keep the atmosphere light and keep guys from focusing too much on the things that aren't going right. You know, say we have a bad game, or, you know, we lose a game, or we have a streak going, you know, keep guys focused on the next thing or being positive, or, keeping the atmosphere light so that guys try and keep that pressure off and can go out and perform, or, you know, have fun in the locker room and keep more of a team / family type atmosphere in the locker room. Because I think that's one thing that's very underrated over here is team chemistry. Mm. And it's by no fault of anybody's own, but, you know, when contracts are 1-year contracts and players have good years or bad years and move up or go to a better team or go to a worse, you know, those type of things, it happens all the time. So team chemistry is one of those things that really just is underrated. And if you look throughout the league, the teams that have kept guys for multiple years and guys that really get well together, have played together, they have success, whether they're on paper the most talented or not most talented. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, like say Vesta last year when they Vesta had such a great season last year when, you know, nobody expected that coming up from Pro A the year before.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that has to do with, and that's one of those things that as a veteran, I try to bring guys together, find something with players that I can connect with and mm-hmm. get everybody together and talking about and on the same page so that, you know, it helps be more successful, let's say that way.
I mean, one thing what I can say from my own experience while sitting on a bench during a game, like the first games you weren't playing that much, but once there was like, I don't know, a bad spurt going on and our coach took a timeout, I always saw you standing up clapping and keeping the atmosphere up. That's probably also something that relates to that being a veteran. Yeah?
Right, and you know, it's a coach's job to be hard on players and to try and push them to get the best out of them. And, you know, as a veteran player, you kind of got to play the good cop to the bad cop and, you know, even out some of the stuff that's getting said, because, you know, you don't want players to get mad at something during the game and then carry it out on the court, or have something said to them in a huddle and then carry it out to the court and have it, you know, carry out onto the court. So I try to, like I said, say stuff, keep guys focused on, don't forget about the past or your mistakes, keep focused on what you can do to fix those mistakes or how can you play better, or, you know, whatever little thing you can do, but you got to stay positive and stay focused on the future rather than things that, you know, the mistakes you made in the past. And
then
for me, it was just, since I knew coming here, obviously I'd spoken with Johan before that, and I knew the situation that I was coming into with the team being on a 4-game winning streak and such good chemistry going and had a good thing going. And I told him, I don't need to be thrown into the rotation, or I don't want to steal anybody's minutes. I just want to, you know, be part of the team. And so, of course, those first couple games when I knew I wasn't going to be playing that much, my best thing to do is to
chip in a different way.
Chip in a different way, be encouraging, talk to guys, talk to young guys, and do those type of things. And then, you know, I remember Frank, I ran into Frank at one point, and he asked me how I was.
Our general manager?
Frank, our general manager, about, and he was asking about, oh, you haven't played that much. And then he told me, yeah, your time will come. And, you know, this was maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
And then these last two games, Alex being out.
Yeah.
And then I got to move in and play a lot at the four position and, you know, help get that victory. And then in the Braunschweig game, and then the next week, I moved over to the five position and was playing the five position against Hamburg. And then we won another game. So, you know, I was able to, with Dylan out, because Dylan was out because of the elbow. So, you know, it's just trying to be that glue guy that can help where I can help. And
And you obviously have to be flexible then, no?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I try to be as flexible of a person, you know, as least stubborn as I can. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people around the league have a different opinion of me, especially the opposing fans. But I'm trying my best not to do that stuff.
Yeah, so Okay. Basically you, as a veteran, you always, you see the bigger picture, and like you can see stuff from maybe like a different perspective at times, not
multiple
only
angles,
always
probably,
exactly,
yeah.
Not always your own, hey, I'm not playing right now, I'm mad, I want to get minutes, but like you see, like I said, the bigger picture.
Right. And, you know, as a younger player, I think every younger player is kind of has that mentality to a certain extent with the way European basketball is. But, you know, moving into me being here at 37, I'm not trying to take young guys' playing positions. So
yeah.
I think it worked out well for me.
Wow.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about maybe or the pressure that this job brings. So what are high pressure situations for you during your job, like probably during games, but what are like special moments where you're like, okay, now the pressure is up, now we gotta focus and do all the little things and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, as a veteran player, I think a lot of times it's mostly in fourth quarter of games, especially in like the BBL, like it comes down to close games, of course. Pressure situations come down to where, you know, every possession counts and we need a defensive stop or we need an offensive possession, we need a good offensive possession. Those are really times that, you know, the pressure gets high, and as the clock ticks down, as a veteran player and I play like that, you know, I'm always trying to know the situation that I'm in when I'm out on the court, you know, if there's a minute and a half left and we're down five or something like that, or, you know, those type of situations, you try and you know, visualize them or do your best at them. And that's something where, you know, it can really weigh on you, especially if, you know, over my career, you lose a lot of games, and those things that you overthink that after the game that, oh, I could have did this or I could have did that, those type of situations, they happen all the time.
So dealing with mistakes, basically a big thing also.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, it gets intensified with, you know, the type of game that it is, the situation you're in, if the coach is yelling at you, if you get to play after that, or if you don't, because, you know, the times where you make a mistake or those situations, and then you get put on the bench and you're like, damn it, I wish I could get back out there and make up for my mistake. But, you know, then what can you do? So other than cheer on the rest of your team. So, yeah.
So what role do like emotions play in these situations where, like you just described, where you get subbed out after like a couple bad plays or sometimes?
I mean, that's one of the tough things that it's been over my career for sure. And I think everybody, you're always working on handling those tough situations. And earlier in my career, it was tough for me because I would get angry or I'd get upset with myself and get frustrated, and I wouldn't be able to come back from that because I get lost in my own head, or then I'd start doing something or thinking about something else and I would be out of it. And, you know, I kind of changed my mentality, or just slowly kept trying to change my mentality of when that stuff start happening, realizing that when I get into those angry situations or have those moments where I get pissed off, try to control them and, you know, have my moment, let it go, and then get back to, all right, back to the veteran, say right now, the veteran leader being, or a vocal leader or a veteran out on the court, And, you know, emotions play a huge role in that. And the ability to control anger for me has been one of those. I mean, I think a lot of people, especially if you play a competitive sport where, like I said, your likelihood or your livelihood depends on whether you're winning or losing. I mean, it really is tough to sometimes to control those.
And what helped you, like, walking down that road of trying to control your emotions? Like, did you have maybe other veterans that talked to you, or coaches that played a big role in that, or family members, like, mirroring your behavior, or, like, what was influencing you on that road, let's say?
Well, I mean, I think for my young career, obviously, I told you about already that I stopped drinking alcohol 8 years ago, and I think that had a huge impact on just my ability to control my anger and my kind of mood swings that I would have. But also, you know, it's something, I think it's more of a self-reflective thing of, you know, I would see it happening when I play the game, or I'd feel good about myself, and then I'd kind of see how I'd react when I'd be rewatching the games, and it'd be like, you know, that's not the type of person I am, or you are. Why are you acting like that? Or why are you reacting to a situation like that on the court? And, you know, I kind of got, I don't want to say fed up with the way I would see, but it felt like something that I wanted to change and work on. And so it's like I said, an ever-changing battle, an ever-continuing battle, because you're tested throughout a 40-minute basketball game. You know, a referee's call, other players, you know, elbows you or gets a cheap shot in on you. Something happens, you know, it's gonna make you angry. It's gonna piss you off or something. And coming back from those type of things or not letting it affect your mentality of staying focused on what you got to do to win the game is for sure one of those things in sports that is half of what it takes to win a game, for sure.
And let's ask the other way around, like, what always dragged you down, like, maybe media or opposing fans or referees, or what was, like, tough for you to handle sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody, if they would knows how I play, they would all say referees. But that's, you know, that's something I don't talk about referees. I don't want to talk about referees. It's just, you know, it's something that every player, all 10 players that are out on the court have to deal with. So that's something I got to deal with my own way. But, you know, certain things can bring you down. I mean, obviously, if you're playing in an opposing gym that has, you know, a big crowd presence, or, you know, a type of atmosphere like the Lock Hall, I say, that just, it gets loud, it feels like the fans are right on top of you. Like, those type of things can really weigh on, you know, your mental focus, especially later in the game, say when you're tired and the other team's just been, say, you've been making a run, or if you're down, you're making a run to get back in the game, and the other team just makes shots, and they can't seem to miss from outside. You have a good, you know, you're playing good defense, and they're making every shot they throw at the basket. Like, those type of things can really kind of wear you down throughout the game, and you know, it's one of those, the players that really excel or take advantage of, I don't want to say take advantage, but accept that, you know, that challenge, are the ones that really excel over here and excel in the basketball world.
So. Yeah. So now let's think, you're done. You're with the game. You come back home, and I don't know, you're alone, you're with your family or your girl or whatever, but where do you get your balance then? You know, because coming from these extreme situations with high pressure, a lot of emotions and all that stuff, and then you just home by yourself or maybe with family or whatever, and I mean, they care, but it doesn't really matter as much anymore. Where do you get your balance then?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people know I have a dog, an 8-year-old rescue dog that I found when he was about 5 weeks old.
Really cute one. Yeah.
He's a shepherd mix. Just looks like a medium-sized German shepherd. But, you know, there's so many times after games that I've gotten home at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and taking him out for a walk, or taking him out for like a half-hour walk or a nice long walk, just to kind of decompress and, you know, go over the game, or, you know, let things go, you know, while you're walking and kind of meditating, I say, somewhat, as they're walking to throughout wherever you go. No, because I walk all over with Barry, and it ranges from time to time. But I do that a lot. You know, I'm being outside in nature, and especially, you know, off days, I try to take advantage of being out there and using those days to stay, get away from basketball and forget about whether, you know, we win or lose, forget about those things. But yeah, I mean, I have, even after, a lot of times after games, I have trouble, I don't want to say winding down, but even falling asleep, just because, you know, the kind of the weight, especially if we have a late game, the weight through the whole day and trying to save all your energy, and then, you know, you exert
the adrenaline is probably still.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, you exert all that energy and the adrenaline, the up and down of the game, and the adrenaline, it takes a lot of time to wear off after a game. And, you know, I've had multiple times, or most of the time, that I can't fall asleep till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning after a game. So,
and it's actually,
it's really a type of, you know, one of the difficult things.
Interesting that you actually brought that up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, last episode we talked about sleep a little bit, and, you know, I don't want to go too deep into that now, but this, what you were just talking about, the fact that you have problems falling asleep after a late game, this is actually a big problem. Yeah. Not probably, yeah, not just for you in that case, but also for other athletes, especially when the games are late, that you are just.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, and, you know, it's even crazy. I don't want to say it's crazier, but if it's a late game on the road and you have a long road trip too, I mean, trying to get enough rest and then you get home sometime early in the morning and then get a normal sleep schedule, or get enough rest and then stay on that normal sleep schedule is kind of throws you all off too. And it's something that can be difficult to deal with.
Can I chip in here with one question?
For sure.
Okay. Because I think that's something I
only accept questions from Leonard.
Okay, go ahead, Leonard.
I run the show here.
So one thing that actually, you know, like I said, I've been doing that for 5 years, and Adam, I would just, could you comment, maybe you've said it already before, but I don't think so. What's different in professional sports between winning and losing? What does winning do? What does losing do?
Yeah, I mean, especially professional sports, it's kind of a matter of livelihood, you know, the ups and downs. It's just a roller coaster that you deal with. And, you know, especially when you only play one game a week, you know, your whole kind of week rides on whether you win or lose. And, you know, if you win the game, everybody's in better spirits, things are going well, you know, everybody around the facilities and in the town, everybody's, you know, positive with you, friendly. Yeah. And then, you know, if you lose a game, you know, it can depend on how you lose a game, but
it's
one of the good things about sucks. It sucks for sure. It always does. But one of the good things about Germany is that the fans are really supportive of you here. Because I know in other countries, you know, you can lose games or you can go on a losing streak, and next thing you know, you're getting spit on and coins thrown at you and all kinds of stuff. From your own fans.
That happened to yourself?
I wouldn't say I haven't had that crazy, but I've definitely had places where the fans weren't supportive as they are here in Germany, so I'm not going to call anybody out directly. But but yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, losing is just one of those things that everything about it, as a professional athlete, like I've said multiple times, your livelihood depends on it. You know, it feels like there's times you just, but I don't think it's, you feel like a failure, but not, you know, then that kind of sense of like, damn, we could have got that, or we should have did this, if we just would have did this different, we could have won the game, blah, blah, blah. So it's, you know, and when you lose, you overthink every little thing that you did wrong. And, you know, you have to cut and analyze film and see what we can fix, or see what we can do better, or see where we went wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when things go right, and, you know, as you're in a losing streak, guys start thinking about, well, what did I do right? No, it's not my fault. And I did it right in this, or I did most of it right. But when you're winning, you know, everybody's happy. You know, the mistakes that you make, you know, it's easier to handle with, and guys can deal with. And even guys are more receptive to constructive criticism or coaching when, you know, after we win, whether they play well or they don't play well. So it's just, being in a competitive type business is something where winning and losing is a matter of one of the things that's really hard for players is leaving that stuff on the court, not taking it, you know, off you with the court. And, you know, there's a lot of times where it's in those losing situations where you get done with the game and you get home and you're just mad or pissed off, and you just can't stop thinking about it. You can't shake it off your mind, and then it carries over to the way you're reacting to your friends, your family, your loved ones, anybody, the way you talk with people, whether you want to go out and just even see people. Sometimes you just, I've had times where I felt so bad after games where I've just gone to my room and laid there for hours by myself just because I was so disappointed with how I played or mad with how I played. And that's, I guess, maybe one of the things about me, because I overanalyze stuff, but I think a lot of other players have those type of feelings too, where it's like they just, when you lose, they don't want to see anybody, they don't want to talk to anybody. But when things are going good, whether you play well or you don't play well, even on a winning, we won the game. That's the main goal of the competition. You winning that game, so you can kind of let other things go.
Dom, you have any other more bomb questions like that?
No, I'm going to take a backseat here now, and I'll let you guys handle it.
Yeah.
maybe I got a question now. Again, so what you just talked about, like dealing with all that type of stuff, do you think let's say when I talk to, friends who don't come from sports, and I tell them, where they're always surprised if I tell them there's a big partying scene, a big drinking scene going on in the professional sports, not just basketball. Do you think that's kind of related with this pressure? Like that's something where players can just compensate with that type of stuff? Like just going out partying, forgetting about anything, or like drinking alcohol, stuff like that?
Well, I mean, I think it's all part of the business. It's from an earlier age. We talk about, you win a championship, you celebrate with champagne. Everybody knows about that. But the drinking and partying atmosphere, I think, it's one of those, you work all week to get to the game, you take care of, you get in the game, you take care of your business, you win the game, you're satisfied with what you're doing, so you just want to go out and celebrate and enjoy the fact that you don't have to worry about, losing the game or what's going to happen tomorrow at practice, or you don't have to have those worries on your mind. So, I took part in that for, God, I don't know, 10 years of my half of my, not 10 years, whatever. I can't remember how far back it is, but a lot of my basketball career, I did that, with the celebrating and what else?
So you think your, let's say, past alcohol addiction was definitely influenced by your job?
I want to say for me it was always part of the game. So, whether it used to be when we would play after the games, it would be win or lose. We were celebrating or we were drinking our sorrows away, or, those type of things, where it would just be on the weekend type of things. But for me, alcohol got to be the problem where I used it, it was everyday type of thing, that not every day, but 5-6 nights out of the week, I would be, having a couple of drinks just to relax after a practice or something like that. Or, but we'd be going out or doing something for, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I mean, not during basketball season so much, I would say. But yeah, it was, there were times during my career where I was, I would have, it wouldn't be a problem for me to be out 5 nights a week, but that's one of those things that, when I gave up alcohol, I kind of gave up that part of my life, and I have no problem leaving it in the past, where, some people, they still enjoy doing those type of things, or they enjoy the nightlife or having a social life and going out and doing all that stuff. But, for me, it's, I don't need alcohol to have fun anymore, and I don't see it as something that I really care to, I had a good run with it for a solid 10 or so years, and I can leave it in my past where it belongs, I guess.
So you think, so looking at the body, of course, that's not a good thing to do, but sometimes, like I've seen players with a lot of partying, and like you described it going on during their career, and I feel like it, like body-wise, of course, it wasn't good, but mentally, I feel like sometimes it helped them to deal with all that type of stuff. So basically, it was, it's a tough statement right now, but good for their career. Yeah. If know what I'm talking about.
No, I know exactly what you mean. A lot of guys, for them, for us, it looks like partying. And for sometimes for them, just that type of stuff takes their mind off of the stress of basketball or the everyday grind that is professional basketball, because that's for sure what it is. People think it's just, oh, you're just playing a sport for a living. But I mean, it's there's a lot more to professional basketball than people think.
So. And it's for like they say, it's for a living. That's what they underestimate. You know, something. It's not like, oh, it's just a game. Calm down. Like, no, that's how you make your money.
Right. And if you don't win, you know, if you don't win, you keep losing, or you don't have a job. Yeah. And you don't, it keeps happening, then nobody wants to sign you. So then you're stuck, like you're not performing or doing what you want to do. You know, it's not like an everyday job where you're still going to, whether you, you know, every Monday through Friday, you're going to be able to go to your job and do your job, whether you win or lose. There's no competition in it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And that aspect, I guess.
Maybe what like a random question, what is something that you had to get used to overseas when you came here?
Oh, I mean, it was different times when I got over here. You have to remember this was 2005, before the cell phone iPhone era. So for me, like one of my first years over here, this is one of the good things and bad things about, you know, this generation and that we live in. But, you know, back in my earlier years when I didn't have those things in my apartment, I didn't have Wi-Fi in my apartment, I didn't have a cell phone, I didn't have a laptop computer. You know, all I had was a DVD player and my old German tube TV and a subscription of my thing. So, you know, getting used to living in a country where you don't speak the language is probably the biggest thing for guys coming over from America, because not being able to just walk somewhere and ask somebody, you know, where is this or how do you do this or what can I do?
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest things to get over for sure. I think obviously being homesick, I don't have that homesickness. I have homesickness obviously, but nothing like years past or, you know, younger guys that, you know, they have friends or family back home that, especially coming out of college, you know, you spend all your time in college with those people and then you're halfway across the world from them. So, you know, you get to miss those people a lot. And that's for sure something that's, I think, tough to get over when you come over here. Obviously cuisine and food is, but it's been more, you know, there's a lot more American influence with some of the, you know, Subway and McDonald's and all those fast food restaurants. So you can get a small taste of home, or, you know, even like Chipotle is here now. And, Five Guy Burger. So, you know, you get a little bit of a taste here in Germany. But, you know, I've been to a couple places where it's, you know, in Cyprus, you got to get used to eating Greek style food. And
are you more a European style of eater or more American way?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why it's tough for me to say that, because I've become so Europeanized that a lot of these things I talk about, they're not really big problems. You know, I love German food. I love tasting different foods from all over the world. You know, all the different places that I travel. There are certain things that I don't know if I'm willing to try, like eating chocolate covered insects or something. But actually, maybe I lie, because in Frankfurt, one of the guys in the office there had some like Cajun covered crickets or something. I tried one of them, so I can't say that. But yeah, I like all different kinds of food from all over the world. So I'm not a picky eater.
Oh. Yeah, you know, can I come back, or you guys?
Sorry, I think I cut you off earlier. Go ahead. It's tough for me to like get the flow of this this conversation, because I think people don't know I'm in Würzburg and these two are in Göttingen sitting next to each other right now. So that's why I'm sometimes a little bit off with saying stuff.
Yeah, not a problem.
It's the second long distance call we have, Leonard, right?
Yes, exactly. I'm very excited to see how the quality goes. But go ahead, ask your question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Since you have such a massive experience, what is there, like, let's say from a basketball perspective, like, is there any major advice you would give like a young talented hooper?
Young players.
Oh, in general.
Maybe especially in, like, an American coming to Europe. Like your I don't know, maybe both. Regular.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's tough, you know, that I've learned over my career here in Europe, and I think it's a battle now with young players. It's been a battle with young players is, you know, you come over as your first couple of years as professional, and it's based on, like, you're trying to put up statistics so that people can, you can show people that you can play over here, so that you can be a scorer, you can be a rebounder, you can do all that stuff. And I found in my career, it's a lot more, you'll be more successful and you'll have a better career if you focus on doing the best for your team and being on a winning team, because I've had more success and more opportunities come from being a mediocre player on a successful team, and, you know, being able to know my role and do those type of things, than being the guy that can score. You know, in my earlier career, I could, you know, I averaged 18 and 9 a couple of times, and that's, yeah, I averaged that, but I was also playing in lower levels or playing, you know, I still wasn't getting the looks or being in the level like I am now. Being an older player, you know, some of my best basketball and my top basketball came later in my career, in my 30s, when I finally realized that, like, yeah, all right, you don't have to do all that stuff. Just be a solid player and help a team win, and go out every time you're on the court and help your team win that game, or do everything possible to help your team win that game. And, you know, people will see that and respect that more than, you know, being the leading scorer on the second last, or being the leading scorer on one of the teams that are lower in the league or something like that. So that's, I think that's something too, that hopefully the mindset kind of changes. You know, everybody's got to go out there and do their own thing and try and put up their numbers and do what they can. But when you focus more on helping a team win a game and doing what you, or how you know how to help a team win the game, then your team shines, you're helpful together, you're successful, you score more, people see you, people notice what you're doing, the little things that you're doing, a lot more than just being, you know, a one trick pony and being the leading scorer, doing some one particular thing well. So that was the short version. Do you want the long version? Oh, sorry.
Talking about statistics, what's your take on advanced stats? Because I know your coach right now, Johan, he's big on that. He loves advanced stats. And I've talked about in earlier episodes where I have this, or I wrote my bachelor thesis about this tool to, like, basically evaluate players or this person's people about how they solve problems and stuff. And I actually tried to look at individual players who had success throughout their career, and also try to look at advanced stats like offensive rating, defensive rating, and I tried to make some connections there. And so that's why I'm interested in what's your take on those type of statistics, since you said individual statistics maybe are not the main thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, that's a realm that I know a little bit about from being here in Göttingen and dealing with Johan and Julian and those guys that do the advanced statistics and reading, but it's not something that I'm really, I'd say, proficient in. So I would think that obviously there would be some correlations that would be made, but, you know, statistics are, to a certain point, you know, in a game that is not just numbers, you know, there's so many variables in basketball, I guess, that statistics can get you to a certain point to focus on these are the things that help you win, or these are the things that make you lose, or these are the things that guys do good. But I don't want to say I want to put all of the weight into those statistics. So
in the end, you have a 15-year experience that will show you things that statistics can't show.
Right. And I mean, I could be completely wrong on that. That's probably just my specific opinion, because I know there's a lot of people that deal with statistics and, you know, they believe in them. They think those are the way that, you know, I mean, there's movies made about it, right? This is what Moneyball is all about, those type of statistics.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it's, I can't say that, you know, I'm right or wrong on that. That's just, I guess, my opinion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Dom, you got any more bomb questions for us?
Boring?
Bomb.
No, I think I'm...
all right, well, let me ask some questions.
Oh, yeah, of course. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, Dom. So what's your sleep routine? How do you get the best sleep of your career?
That's a really good question. my sleep routine. So, you know, I think we owe the listeners the picture of me with the stupid glasses on, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. you gotta send there. That. Have you seen him with those glasses on, Adam?
I don't think I've ever seen Dom with glasses on.
He has these stupid orange Well, Dom, you explain.
Blue light blockers.
Blue light block. Yeah. You were telling me because of the screens and whatever.
Exactly. But you know, Leonard, one thing, these glasses are not stupid. You can ask Bennett Hunt.
They just look stupid. Okay. They're not stupid. They look stupid.
Aesthetically, you look stupid, but.
Yeah, well.
They might work.
For sure, so, they work.
If you really want to find out about my sleep routine now, then just give me some room to talk here, please. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what?
Here, hold on. I'm gonna go to the bathroom. The mic's all yours.
So sleep routine. Yeah, you know what? I just try to keep it easy. I actually put my glasses on when I go back home. It looks relatively stupid. I have to admit, but I think it does the trick a little bit. So
yeah, that's your go-to.
Yeah, and I actually always try to read right before I go to sleep, because that just calms me down.
Yeah, it just brings you.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, I think I said that in the first episode, didn't I? But back then I didn't mention the glasses. You said
so much stuff already.
Yeah. That, you know, that gives me like, it sounds like giving me a bad vibe here, but this is actually my sleep routine. But that's a great question. Do you also have a question for Leonard, by the way?
Well, I was going to ask Leonard the same question. You got any a different sleep routine? What do you, because I mean, everybody has a different sleep routine.
Yeah, true.
I try to, like, 1 hour before I go to sleep or before I think I will go to sleep, I try to, like, slow down screen time. And also I try to read. But then sometimes, I'll be honest, I'll still catch a TV show and fall asleep to that. But in the end, it's all about how you feel when you wake up the next day. And if I feel repeatedly that I'm tired in the morning, or that I've, even though I get my hours of sleep, that I still don't feel well, that's when I realize, okay, you got to change something in your routine. And usually I see, okay, you've been watching a lot of TV shows like right before you go to sleep or something like that. That's how I try to manage a little bit, but it's definitely not the same every night.
Do you try to go to bed at like the same time every night, or
is that's also something I try to do?
Yeah. Get in that pattern.
Yeah, for sure. But also that sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it's
tough.
You said, with away games, you come home at like 1 or 2, and then your schedule is fucked up right away.
Right. As basketball players, you don't have a normal sleep schedule or travel schedule or work schedule, you know, playing games on the weekend and then, you know, practicing at different hours, different teams have to practice different hours throughout the week. So, yeah, it's definitely.
Since, you know, I still have one question in regards to that.
Mm.
Because, you know, I think the topic sleep and performance is kind of evolving right now, and everybody knows that sleep is important and that it's also going to have a positive effect on performance.
Mm.
But have you ever been like exposed to, I don't know, teams you played before? Was there ever anybody who just gave you a little education on sleep? Was that ever the topic?
I mean, it wasn't. It's. I know there's always been, especially in the college years, they always harped or they always try to teach you about start good sleep habits and go to bed at the same time so that you can be rested and recovered and all that stuff. I remember getting like a lot of information in that era, but you know, on a professional level, there's not a lot of people that, or not a lot of places that, you know, sit you down or have somebody like you that talk on a daily basis or put up, you know, different notes and letters, not letters, but what is it?
Info posts.
Yeah. Kind of all around the locker room about, you know, the significance of sleep and different studies and statistics and all that stuff. So,
By the way, these are info posts, but I think all the guys call it piss papers, right?
Yeah. Piss papers. I say you put them up all over the locker room, but you just put them right in front of the urinal so that everybody has to look at them.
Exactly.
Because you know everybody's going to go there. So,
yeah.
I mean, that was great, great planning by you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, that's funny though.
Oh. I just had a question, but I forgot about it. What was it?
Sleep.
It was not about sleep anymore. I tried to change the subject because this is always Dom's favorite subject. We've been talking about this for like 3 episodes already now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the listeners don't want to hear anymore fun of about sleep, Dom. They're done with it.
Yeah.
One thing we were talking about, sleep habits. I started listening to, on YouTube, they have just ambient music. Like playlist, or not playlist, but like if you type in ambient music, search it, there's just like these 7-hour videos or like 8 hour videos.
I heard about this.
Of just ambient music, and then just kind of like a picture. I want to say kind of like a psychedelic picture, but it's, you know, just a picture that's kind of vaguely moving, and then ambient music. I've been putting those on and like putting the timer on my iPad for an hour, and then it'll turn off after an hour. And that's really been helping me, just, you know, it kind of gives me something to listen to, but it's nothing to really focus on, because we, you know, I live kind of by a main street on here in Göttingen, and at that time of night, you can randomly hear a car go by like or something. And if I'm, you know, if I'm awake and my mind's kind of not resting yet or hasn't calmed down yet, I'll listen to those cars and I'll notice all those different noises. And when I have that music on while I'm sitting, like laying there, it really, like I listen to that and I don't even notice all the other stuff. And it helps me to relax and fall asleep quicker, I think.
That made me realize I have one more routine I do sometimes also. I listen to like audiobooks or podcasts like to fall asleep, but only like I did that when I was young a lot. And then also I wanted to say I saw some YouTube videos of people like whispering into the microphone.
Like the ASMR stuff, right?
I don't know.
Have you heard about
called.
This?
I don't know what it's called, but it's just people whispering and saying weird stuff and then other people complimenting them how like what a nice voice they have, or whispering voice. And that was crazy. You know more about that?
Well, what it sounds like is, I think it's ASMR is the name of it, but it's just a lot of it. People, something about certain sounds, are pleasing to people, or they calm people down. So, but there's also like, I've gotten into watching like massage videos like on YouTube, and there's the girl that is giving the massages also has a microphone on, and she's kind of just basically walking you through it, kind of like a yoga instructor would walk you through a meditation or something like a guided meditation. But she's just walking you through what she's doing in the massage, and she has such a calm and mellow, like monotone voice, and it's very relaxing that it's almost one of those things. Yeah, it helps relax whoever's getting massaged, but it also is, you know, this afternoon or like the past couple of days too, I'll be listening to those and nod off or take a like 20 or 30 minute nap because I'm sitting there listening to it and it's so calming, it'll put me right to sleep. So yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I've seen that also with kind of other noises. I don't know, like people rubbing like toothbrush bristles really close to a microphone, or like crinkling paper. It's like, yeah, no, this is a YouTube wormhole to go down one day. Just type in ASMR and then like see where it takes you.
ASMR, you know, I gotta try that tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
You can make money with anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, YouTube. I tell my parents all the time back home too. It's like, I don't know. Just type it into YouTube. I'm sure there's an instructional video on YouTube on how.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. Well.
I got one more question, Dom, before you try to wrap it up here, because I hear you getting impatient.
He's itching at it.
Nah, I'm not.
You said earlier, or in the beginning of the episode, that you're really into podcasts. Maybe you have some podcasts that you really enjoy listening to that you could like tell us about.
I like two of them that are my favorite. Well, obviously, Brain Drops. Go out and whenever this episode airs, go out and download it. All that, you know, click subscribe. You know,
follow
share,
us on Instagram. Anything.
Yeah, you know, I do. I always listen to Joe Rogan's podcast. I love Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah,
I think he really has kind of helped me formulate a mentality too, because he's one of those guys that's open to listening to whatever type of argument, whether he's for or against it, and he tries to see everything from everyone's perspective in an argument or in a conversation. And he really does a good job of like mediating when it, you know, he's at other podcasts where he's had debates on there and people are going from one side to the other, and you know, guys start getting talking and arguing, and he's like, hold on, you're throwing out these statements and we need to retract this and talk about this, because you know, he calls people out and on their BS sometimes, which I really like. But yeah, it's that's one of my favorites to listen to. I also listen to the Monday Morning Podcast with Bill Burr, just because he's a hilarious stand-up comedian.
I heard about that, like, one too.
His voice cracks me up. It's just hilarious. And I love listening to him and all the crazy stuff that goes on his head. So I'll listen to that one. Hold on, let me go.
You heard about the podcast All the Smoke from Matt Barnes and Stefan Jackson?
No, I have not. Which one was that about?
They also started a podcast, those two as hosts, and they always like reminisce about their times in the NBA and the league, and then they have guests coming in like Kevin Garnett, Dwayne Wade, you know, you name all the players, and it's they really talk like, let's say, real talk, you know, like they talk about the the stuff that you usually don't hear about. It's very, very interesting, very good one too.
Right, right. They talk about some stuff that in the league or something that you're not supposed to be talking about. But what was the other one I just looked at? I had another one called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, where it's just like he has a bunch of historical podcasts. It's kind of history of America and how it became and all that different kind of stuff. Or he's really interesting for people that like historical type podcasts. And then the other one what was that? I just lost it now. You said Joe. Oh, Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. I don't know if you've ever. It's called Hot Boxing. But I don't know if you know Mike Tyson, obviously the famous boxer, is now like huge into marijuana sales. Like he has his own company. Yeah, he has his own company, Tyson Ranch or whatever.
He's like the marijuana mogul right now in the States, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like there's like him, Snoop Dogg, Wiz Khalifa are like the three top like faces for marijuana in America right now. And he does a podcast with what are the guys' names? I can't think of their names. Even a couple of guys that played the NFL with him. I can't remember their names right now. It's moving me. But they have guests on and they just have real conversations, and it's kind of crazy to hear how different of a person Mike Tyson is now than he was back in his fighting days when he was a younger person, and him being able to like come to terms with the person that he is now and the person that he was back then, because you know he's completely changed. And it's one of those things I knew, like I remember him from when he was that like junkyard dog type guy to now he's just this super mellow stoner, I guess is the best way to put it. But he's definitely an interesting dude. I love hearing his life stories because he's got some crazy ones for sure.
Interesting. Well, I have to listen to that one.
Yeah, he's a good one. That one's actually on YouTube. I watched the videos of it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will put the links and the names of those podcasts in the description for our listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now for me it would be time to wrap it up, unless you guys have something you want to say still.
I mean, I think it was a blast having Adam on.
For sure. Yeah.
I had a great time, and I feel like we could keep this conversation going for while, for sure.
Hours, yes.
Yeah.
Do it like the Joe Rogan podcast for 3 hours.
Yeah, well, that's funny because that's what I like. That's my milestone marker or my benchmark, because I've watched that so much that it's like I'm expecting a 3-hour podcast.
Yeah, Dom and me, we've been at 30 or 35 minutes for now, so we don't. Maybe this is not the episode to go for 3 hours right away.
Yeah, no. Well, if that's the case, we're still pretty long. How long we've been going for about an hour now?
Yes, it's an hour and 5 minutes now.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
cool.
That's
perfect.
So it was a blast. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Adam. It was a blast, of course. And
don't be afraid to invite me back on. And I mean, I might have to give a shout out on this episode to Mike Stockton.
Mike!
He was all excited about me coming on and having it. So if you enjoyed the podcast, we got to get together and do a reunion podcast here with Dom Saps and Leonard. That'd be a lot of fun.
For sure. You're always Mike, welcome.
If you hear that. Yeah, we're gonna make that happen. I'm sure you're up for that, Mike.
Mike is the next
one. I'm nominating him. That's my nomination.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's maybe something like
you gotta have
like
people nominating each other, right?
Yes.
No, every time you have a guest on, you have to have them nominate somebody so that you have some ideas of people to interview or podcast.
That's what we need to do as the first guest.
Exactly. Yeah, man, this is experience right here. I'm just helping you out.
For the listeners who don't know Mike Stockton.
Yeah, sir.
He was a player. He played for us the last 2 years.
Yeah, he played here in Göttingen the last couple of years, but I also played with him in Ludwigsburg my first 2 years there in the 14-15, 15-16 season. Actually, 3 years. He was... Oh, Mike, I'm going to screw. I've been around this league for too long, so it was either 2 or 3 years. Whatever it was, it wasn't long enough because we should have been playing a couple more years together. That was a
great
lot of fun.
Dude.
Yeah.
I got to play with him for 1 year, and he's definitely the next one to go. So you nominate Mike Stockton. We really appreciate you coming out for us. For the listeners, follow us on Instagram and maybe send us some messages, maybe some questions, some stuff Adam said maybe you were interested in or you have questions about. And yeah, keep promoting our podcast, and thanks for Adam for coming here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Leonard.
Thanks a ton. Thanks a ton, Adam.
And Dom, sorry. Didn't mean to leave you out.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
Tschüss.